They have heard nothing yet.
Well, except it's more a little more difficult for them because we were in depression. Depression.
Yeah.
These kids are without jobs in an inflationary era, which is horrendous.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've got into your a little bit after marriage and your first home. When did the children come along?
Steve was born in 1939. He was married about 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Russell was born in 1942. Mm-hmm. Now, the third one is the one I have trouble with. He was just 29.
Mm-hmm.
So what year was that? He was 29 in August. 42. I think he's 47.
My daughter's thinking.
Yeah, he is 47.
What's his name?
Bruce.
Bruce.
Okay.
Were they all born in Squirrel? You said you were moved to Beachwood Boulevard. Were they all in?
Steve was born at the Montefiore and the other two at the McGee.
Oh.
But were you living on Beachwood Boulevard then?
No. When Steve was just a very little... Steve was 2 years old, we moved to Normally Place. And that's where we remained until we moved here. 9 years ago.
Oh, you've been here that long?
Mm-hmm.
You want to tell us how you got into B'nai B'rith to start?
Well, actually, I think part of it started before I actually went into B'nai B'rith Women with Nate, feeling that I ought to get out, I ought to join something, I ought to do something, and someone took me to Beth Sholem's sisterhood, and someone took me to a ladies' hospital aid meeting, and, you know, I was still a stranger here, and it wasn't appealing to me. But when I was pregnant with Steve, I was Mildred Feldman was a very, very close friend of mine, late Meyer Feldman's wife. And Meyer had been very active in Lodge 44 of B'nai B'rith as a very young man and through the years. And Mildred became involved in it because when they were engaged, she used to go with him to all the functions. And at that time, there was only one chapter of B'nai B'rith Women in the city. Lillian S. Davis had about 1,000 or more members. And Mildred felt that it's time we had a second chapter. That was the beginning of talk in B'nai B'rith on top level, that instead of one large unit, it's better to have multiple units because you get more leadership, etc. And so Mildred must have picked up the idea someplace at the men's meeting. And she felt that the Lillian S. Davis chapter was too old for us and that we ought to start another one. And she pioneered. And she said to me, come on, you'll come to my house and we'll see what we can do. And there were 12 of us there. And we started the next chapter, Menorah chapter, at that time. And I became part of it really because Mildred said it was the thing to do. And we began from scratch. And right from scratch, they were after me to do something, and I didn't want to be anything. I really had no desire to be anything or do anything. I just wanted to help out.
Stephen was a baby.
No, Steve wasn't born yet.
Oh, Stephen wasn't born yet.
At the time the chapter was installed and the first set of officers were installed, I was so pregnant I had somebody stand in for me because we started to talk in September and Steve was born in February. The chapter, I think, was installed and chartered around December, so it was just before Steve was born. And so I helped out. I think I was a recording secretary at one point. I think I was a Book of Life chairman, and it must be obvious to you that I really didn't want to be anybody, but the war years came. And Nate was practicing law and working in defense, but you have to understand my Nate wasn't just working in defense. Nate held his electrician license at one time. His mother, Oliver Sholem, believed that anything anybody can do, her children should do. So his brother had to have his license as a plumber, and Nate had to learn electricity. And so he went to work in a defense plant to really do the kind of work he knew how to do. He was wiring LSTs, and he used to work from 4 in the afternoon till 2, 3 in the morning.
Who did he work for?
Brit.
That wasn't IRA Fields.
Somehow
company.
He knows IRA.
Because
sure.
He was doing the first LSTs. I had interviewed him.
Yeah.
What did you call that, Brit?
Brit Electric Company, I think, out in Leedsdale. And so, you know, I almost never saw him. It was a terrible time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
seems to me, let me see. Yeah, it was only, couldn't have been Russell, because I may have become pregnant during, no. Wait a minute. Well, yeah, we had already, already moved to Normally Place, I'm almost sure, because Steve was a little boy, and it's hard for me. I don't think, Russell may have been born by then, I don't know. I just know, no, Russell couldn't have been born, because I was president of that chapter from 43 to 45. He was born in 45. But I'll tell you, they got me at a weak moment. I had been elected the first vice president and thought it over for a couple of months and then thought to myself, this is ridiculous. If they think I'm going to be president, they're crazy. And I resigned. And then I was on the nominating committee, and as I say, it was in the middle of the war years. I wasn't seeing Nate. And they said, if ever there was a time for you to do something, this is it. Because you're alone all the time and so forth. And as I said, they got me at a weak moment and I became the president. I became president from nothing.
In the minority.
And yes, and that was the story of my life all through organizational activity. I went, while I was president of the chapter, the second term, I held a secretaryship in the Council of B'nai B'rith Women here. Which at that time was recording, financial, the whole bit. And so I went straight from the presidency of my chapter into the presidency of the entire council, which today is unheard of. And I was like the teacher who stayed one day ahead of the class because, and I tried hard not to let anybody know how little I knew. And I had a very successful 2 years as chapter president. It was delightful. We grew. See, that's the story of the Jewish people. It was a crisis. Everybody wanted to join everything, and those Jews, they knocked the doors down to get in. And became president of the council, and then the district got after me. They wanted me to be a district officer, and I kept saying no, because by then I had 3 children, and I said I would not get involved in anything that involved traveling until all 3 were in school. Now, I had excellent help. We had a housekeeper that came to us when Steve was 1 year old and stayed with us till she died 25 years later, a young woman. And she was like our family. We were very devoted to her as she was to us. And as soon as Bruce went into school, I went in, see, and this will follow what I said to you before. All my life I've gone into something from on a jump. I didn't go into a district vice presidency. Something happened. There was a death and someone moved away. So I went into the position of first vice president of the district from nothing.
A council encompassed all of Pittsburgh.
All of the greater Pittsburgh area.
Greater Pittsburgh, all right. And yeah. District.
Wait a minute. When I was president, it was Western Pennsylvania Council.
Western Pennsylvania.
Yeah. It took in the Mon Valley and so forth. The district is 4 states. Pennsylvania, West Virginia, New Jersey, and Delaware. And as soon as I finished the presidency of the district, I moved into the national picture. And there, too, I was very frightened by it all. And when they came to ask me to take a position nationally, I made it abundantly clear that unless I didn't want to be treasurer, that's, you know, the last one. But I said, unless I was given the last vice presidency, I wouldn't take anything. I was terrified of the whole thought of national and all that it entailed. And so really, I made my own choice. I probably could have, I know I, because I was asked if I would move faster, and I couldn't. I couldn't in any way accept the fact that I would move that fast. Perhaps if I had it to do today, I might have done it differently, because I think all international presidents should be no older than 18 years old. Based on the way the world is going, you literally beat a woman into the ground during those years. So I took third vice presidency, and I moved up third, second, first, and so forth. But interestingly, I took membership on that level at a time when every organization was having membership problems, and B'nai B'rith Women too, and began to work. Now, you must understand that I had never there too. When I got certain chairmanship on a district level, invariably it was something I'd never done on any other mm-hmm. level. Each time I did it the hard way. Mm-hmm. I became a national membership chairman, never having had membership mm-hmm. on any level ever, mm-hmm. and found it very interesting and fascinating. And from 10 years of problems with membership, we turned it around and began to make net gains every year. And so I was repeated in that position.
When did you take this chairmanship of this national membership term? Do you recall that?
Well, let's see. I was president 71 to 74, and I was, must have been 71 back 5 years, mm-hmm. so because it was 60. A 2-year term first and then a 3-year term.
About 65, 66.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
did you enjoy it?
I loved it. I just loved it. Now, I had the interesting, in those years, the international vice presidents didn't travel quite as much. But because of the way we were doing membership, we took the membership sessions, the training, etc., and all the innovative ideas we had. Instead of bringing the people in, we went to the areas. Mm-hmm. That was the new twist that seemed to work. Mm-hmm. And so I was traveling because of that, and also I was being called out as a speaker. Mm-hmm. So I probably traveled more than most vice presidents ever. That was the beginning of vice presidents traveling.
Adam, in the terms of what's going on with women today, how closely were you related to the men's groups?
We're a family organization. Mm-hmm. We're part of the family. We operate separately, but there are many things we do. There are some things we do together. There are many things we do alike. Mm-hmm. And there are many things...
But you had complete autonomy.
Yes.
That's what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm. I think we need some more background on actually what B'nai B'rith mm-hmm. functions are, what your aims are. From starting from the beginning, from when you organized the menorah chapter.
Well, you must remember that in organizing a chapter, people like to think that people join organizations or organize things because they think the cause is great and they just want to be a part of it. Not true. I've never found it so. People join things for a variety of reasons, the least of which is the purpose of the organization. They join because they've been asked, they want to be with other people, it may be an ego trip, whatever. It's when you become part of the organization that you suddenly become wed to what the organization is doing, has meaning to you. One of the things that, not initially, I went in because somebody I liked and respected said, come on along. But what interested me from the start was the fact that it was many faceted. It wasn't a single program. And I felt that whatever your peculiar interests might be, you could find a place for it. The B'nai B'rith Youth Organization, if you like to work with teenagers, the Hillel Foundations, which then, as a very young woman didn't mean such a lot to me. I wasn't so far removed from the campus, although I knew nothing about Hillel. Hillel was about to be born at Hunter at the time I left. I had heard talk of it, that's all. I didn't know what it was. But Hillel, if you care about what's happening with college youth, the Anti-Defamation League, which in itself is a whole world of protection for the Jews, and I felt then, just as I feel now, that... And it's a saying, many people who have come into great prominence in B'nai B'rith, who've been leaders among the men, for example, have often said that everybody's a member of B'nai B'rith, but only some pay dues. Mm-hmm. Because when ABL does something, it's for the total Jewish community. Mm-hmm. Hillel, kids that belong to Hillel, active in Hillel on campus, very often don't have either parent involved in B'nai B'rith or B'nai B'rith Women. The B'nai B'rith Youth Organization are most often kids whose parents don't support the organization. And then the Children's Home in Israel, as it developed, had a strong pull on me. And then there was the fact that you were also involved in the community, that B'nai B'rith Women as an organization also had a role in the community, whether it was helping on a drive or working with the kids at juvenile court or working with the patients at Kane Hospital, whatever, the kosher meals on wheels. I liked that aspect, too, that it wasn't everything away, that there were things here. And over the years, as I say, these things began to pull on me more and more. But it's interesting, most people, and I think it's very natural, develop a feeling for a phase or two of the organization. And I seem to have remained the generalist. Mm-hmm. I find something exciting. Mm-hmm. The career in counseling, which we do today, is fascinating because I think they're here, for example, as well as in some places even more, they're counseling more and more mature women than they are students. Mm-hmm. Because women are coming back into the business field and they need help. Mm-hmm. And they're counseling more and more kids whose careers have dropped dead on them while they're in college. They started to study teaching and suddenly, where do you go? Mm-hmm. I find that fascinating. There's so many things. And of course, remember, as you move along, Natalie, I can understand the average member in any organization becoming bored. How long can you go to the same meeting, and programming across the board is usually deadly today because you can't meet the competition. How long can you go to those meetings and sit and not become bored? But there is an added bonus for the woman who will allow herself to be a leader on other levels. Because the people I've met, the speakers I've heard, the experiences I've been involved in, I can't get bored. Couldn't possibly.
Oh, no, I understand that. I was curious, does B'nai B'rith in Israel go in a particular direction, like Council does with education and Hadassah
with medicine? B'nai B'rith in Israel is the most fascinating. I was just reading a letter from one of our women there. If you want to know what they're involved in, everything. I have never seen women... Incidentally, we're very heavily organized in Israel. And remember, it's a different scene. They have Russian-speaking lodges and English-speaking lodges. The men and women are both called lodges there. Mm-hmm. We call them chapters. The women here, they call them lodges. Russian-speaking, English-speaking, French-speaking, Hungarian-speaking, you name it, everything. And they operate differently. The Russians coming in don't pay dues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Until you accustom them, even when they're there for a number of years, to the thought that you belong to an organization and pay dues, that's a whole new scene. But our women have been superb, and the men, you know, the thing that I think that touched me the most through all the years was at the height of the Yom Kippur War, they were going to meet the planes of Russians coming in. You know, it was interrupted by the war, mm-hmm. but they weren't going to let them come in, and they would go to the planes and meet them and take them to the rehabilitation centers and do for them. Many of them who had the contacts were practically at the front. You know, they're, after all, Jewish mothers. Mm-hmm. These boys were called in. They had nothing with them. One of my very, very dear friends, and that's a story, too, in Israel, the neighbor's woman, a very active woman, and her husband were called by a general that they know a day or two later to say, you've got to help, you've got to help, please, they need this and they need that. And he got them a special pass, and they went around to the B'nai B'rith lodges, and they got hats and underwear and chocolate and socks and things of that nature. And that pass got them so close to the front that within minutes before they got there, there had been bombing and a whole bunch of kids who were seriously hurt and killed. So on top of delivering the stuff, they had the horrible task of taking names to go home to call parents afterwards. But this is the way they're involved with the soldiers. They have a huge project going at the border settlements. They take care of them. You name it. Almost anything you can think of by way of service.
Did it get started through American push, or was it self-generating? You know, the
Birth
in Israel.
I think it's usually self-generating, not only in Israel, but all over. Remember that the B'nai B'rith was a very, very special organization in Europe. Before World War II, it was an elitist group. Oh, sure, the men used to wear formal clothes to come to meetings.
Oh,
sure.
When was it started, and where?
In the It's 133. Wait a minute. 1945, Russell was born. And that was B'nai B'rith's 100th birthday, and Russell is now 33 years old. Is that right? Mm-hmm. 45 from now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, of course, the scene overseas is different today. They were wiped out in so many countries.
What country was it originated?
It was originated in New York.
Oh.
Then.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, before the Nazis, did chapters spread to Europe also?
Yeah, it's all over. B'nai B'rith is in over 40 countries in the world. And it's fascinating when you go to visit. I had an experience in Dublin, Ireland. I'll never forget. I'm sitting there in this woman's home, and they had lovely lunch, and I'm the international president, and they're greeting me, and they're discussing things. And one, had my eyes on this lovely young red-headed, blue-eyed, freckled-faced gal, and she's talking to me, and finally she stopped, and she said, "You don't understand a word I'm saying, do you, love?" I said, "No, I don't." Such a thick Irish brogue. And, you know, I had to periodically say, "Lily, they're Jews." And it was, remember Lord Briscoe?
Yes.
It was his daughter-in-law and her husband, the son that has taken his place in the House of Commons, where my host and hostess, they took me around while I was there. You go to these different countries, it's fascinating. You sit there, and here's this group of Jewish ladies, and they're talking an entirely different language, mm-hmm. and they have their own. They operate differently, much differently than we do. And while the picture is now changing, they're becoming very much more like we. They have something, have had, and in many places still do. Did it in the United States and Council of Jewish Women, the neighborhood, everybody would join. You want to know what it is? Great membership dinner. You can't join because you want to. You got to be somebody special. Blackballing years ago.
Oh, wow.
Now they don't blackball, but they don't reach out. But it's becoming much more democratic now. They fight us, but they're running through it our way. South American countries, I'm sure, no matter what they say, they're elitist groups. They're the special groups. And that pattern has changed. You see what's bringing about the change is the understanding that there aren't many Jewish communities. There's one Jewish community throughout the world, and if we're not one, mm-hmm. we're not going to be at all. Mm-hmm. And everybody's dependent on everybody else. And I'm now international affairs chairman for the second time around. It's a chairmanship that only goes to a past international president. And I want to tell you, the meetings that I attend with these people from all over the world are absolutely fascinating. Mm-hmm. Just fascinating. Can you imagine what goes on when we had the boycott of tours to Mexico, and the person from Mexico comes in and says, "What are you doing to us, the Jewish community?" Mm-hmm. And the man from Chile stands up and says, "Do you know what this kind of thing does to us? You are a free people. I could go home and my synagogue could be closed or my business closed." It's a whole, we forget here that while this is their home, and what I have found, particularly in South America, the difference between the younger man who was born there and the older man who came there as a result of the Holocaust, who's been this route before, and has to think in terms of living with his bag packed again, and you live through all these things, you know, as they react to certain political things that are happening.
Is this a loose organization? How do you operate? I mean, you have regular meetings scheduled, or do you meet as in a certain place, you know, for the international, this committee, the International Affairs Committee?
Remember, we have a building in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The B'nai B'rith building, and most of the meetings are held in Washington. Now, the International Council usually tries, they only meet about once or twice a year, and they usually try to have every other meeting out of the United States. Mm-hmm. But today, they are trying to watch, like everyone, the finances, mm-hmm. and they determine according to what's most feasible and economical. And I'm sure it must be obvious to you that the people who are the leaders overseas, for the most part, have to be people of means.
Mm-hmm.
Because as much as the organization may want to help them, it costs them a
mm-hmm.
great deal. These people, when they come from Australia, New Zealand,
mm-hmm.
and they come from all over.
Mm-hmm.
The people we see the most are the people from Great Britain and France and all over South America, from many, many places in South America, Australia, Israel.
Is there anything in South Africa?
Yes, we have lodges in South Africa. We had a representative from Germany last time. We had a representative from Italy. And we have contacts with, but don't see as often, the people from places like Greece and so forth. And theirs is a whole different world. And you learn that the countries are different. Some things you really can't put on the record about what's going on and the way the Jewish community lives. But it used to be the Russians were the Jews of silence. There are other places where they are the Jews of silence now. And they're really in all too many places. It's an aging community. No young people. Young people are off to school, away. And it's rare that they return. Because what is their, there's no future there. And so as you look at the world Jewish community today, it has to be one community. There aren't that many of us. Not anymore. Have either of you seen the statistics recently? Was it in the Chronicle? Where did I read it? Or did I find it to be on the Jewish population? They can almost point to the future with a no Jewish community. We are, I think we're at zero population growth, practically. So what kind of future can that be?
Where was that written material?
I'm trying to think where I read it. I read so many things. It was either in the Chronicle, or I may have heard it at the meeting. It might have been at the meeting that I was at, that they were discussing it, but the figures are very frightening.
When did you start doing your enormous amount of traveling when you became international vice president?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Prior to that, I had traveled within the district confines. But when I became the international vice president, particularly when I became second vice president and membership chairman, I started to travel all over the country and Canada. And then, of course, when I became the president is when I started, I did some traveling overseas.
Well, so from about the 10 years, the mid-60s to the mid-70s.
Yeah.
How, were any of the children still at home when you started?
Oh, yes. What I found was, as the years were going by, it was becoming increasingly difficult for a different kind of reason. You worry about the younger woman and her ability to get out and so forth, but now I know it's easier when you're younger, because while your husband is at home, the children are at home. And then you reach that stage where you go off and your husband is alone because no one's home anymore. And I remember it was a terrible shock to our whole family when our housekeeper died, because she was a delight. She ran a kosher home better than any Jewess you've ever seen and kept a tight rein on the children. They adored her, and she took care of everything. And how we all pulled together, and I was delighted that my boys who had been raised with this woman in the house, and yet when she goes, they'll be helpless. But they were marvelous. They pitched in and helped. One of the sweetest memories I have, I was already an international vice president, and the children were at home, because remember, Steve went to college here in Pittsburgh, and Russell did his undergraduate work in Pittsburgh, and of course Bruce was home. And I had gone to District 6, I don't know whether I was in St. Louis or where, and I spoke to the women, and they were very kind, and they gave me a standing ovation, and I flew home the next day, and Bruce and Russell and Steve were helping me do the dishes. They were talking and I was doing the dishes. And at one point I said, you know, fellas, something's got to be wrong. Yesterday I was queen for the day, and here I am with my hands in the sink. And Bruce said, Mother, stop talking and do the dishes. And I've always...